Good morning, everybody, and welcome to our glorification of, our remembrance of, our appreciation of Srila Prabhupada. This is Bhagavatam class time, but a little different today because we do want to focus on that event of 50 years ago. And then I guess I should mention, you know, that our American cousins, of course, beat us to the bell, you know, 3 years earlier. but I wanted to talk about the importance of the day that we're celebrating and why it's important. Sometimes, as devotees, Devaki very nicely in her introduction was asking everybody how long they've been associated with the Hare Krishna movement, ISKCON. And, you know, 10 years is a long time. 20 years is doubly as long. 30, triply as long. 40, quadruple. 50, quint something. So it's a long time. And our involvement with the Hare Krishna movement over that period of time, we become very familiar with the different practices that we engage in on a daily basis. Chanting Hare Krishna, rising early, attending Srimad Bhagavatam class, engaging in service, honoring prasadam. All of those things become second nature to us. And actually, on that point, I think we should be very grateful that they become second nature. How wonderful is that, that those activities become second nature. One of the reasons we get up early in the morning, of course, is because Krishna gets up early in the morning, you know. So we're following in his footsteps. So that becomes our second nature. That's actually a very, very glorious and wonderful thing. So we become very familiar with those things, with those activities like that. But the funny thing is, for me personally, this type of thing and Srila Prabhupada's reasons for doing it, incorporating ISKCON, and all the things that flow from that. These things, and I guess I am what they call in ISKCON, you know, in terms of service, you be classified. We of course, shouldn't pigeonhole anybody, least of all the devotees. But I guess, in a broad sense, my service would be defined as being a manager like that. But even among the managers, I find that there's an element of unknown about this. And maybe unknown is the wrong word. Maybe unsure or lack of certainty as to how it relates to our everyday life as devotees. But for Srila Prabhupada, and he is our, you know, not just our guru, he's our founder, Acharya. In fact, I want to go back to that subject, and I hope I remember to go back to that subject. I usually say this when I'm speaking, that I hope I go back and I hope I remember. And the reason I do that is I hope someone in the audience will remember to remind me that, to go back. But Srila Prabhupada, what I would like to go back to, but I don't want to talk about it right now, is that Srila Prabhupada is no ordinary guru. First and foremost, you know, that's such an important principle, for us at least, internally, as devotees and followers of Srila Prabhupada, to actually understand. He is no ordinary guru. So I will go back to that. But in terms of the other, the day that's in it, I wanted to focus a little bit on that first. So we're celebrating the incorporation of ISKCON. Now, Prabhupada, as Devaki was saying, came to the UK. His first visit was on September the 11th, right? That was the first visit. And when he came, that event in and of itself was a pretty extraordinary thing. Of course, those devotees that came ahead of him, the seven, I once made the mistake of saying six when Malati was in the audience. I won't make that mistake again. When those six came, sorry, Malati, when those seven came, we had little Saraswati coming also. Who knows what sort of personality she was in her previous life that, you know, such a young age, little girl is coming to start the Hare Krishna movement in the UK. Quite amazing. So because they had come ahead of time and they had been very successful, mainly through their contact with famous people, and of course the famous people, you know, I always you know, slap myself on the face for when I was growing up, I was never a Beatles fan, you know. But anyway, their association with the Beatles, they had created quite a fuss, quite a commotion, quite a interest in Prabhupada coming. So when he came and landed in Heathrow Airport, the press were there. So that was the first thing Prabhupada that he did when he sat on UK soil. He was answering press questions, and then he was driven away in a white roller. I've been coming to the UK now for many, many years, and sometimes quite often landing at Heathrow Airport, and I've never been driven away in a white roller, you know? What's going on? So he was driven away. You can just imagine that. Sometimes we think, you know, and Prabhupada was asked that question. Don't know if I should tell that story, but you know the story on the radio show and with that fellow Joe Pine, such a wonderful, wonderful kind of pastime, and Prabhupada's brilliant ability to be intuitive and to respond so appropriate to questions that are just immediately fired at him like that. But that's often a thing, and we know the story that, hang on a second, you know, Krishna owns everything. Ahamsa Vasya Prabhuvo, Krishna is the owner of everything, the controller of everything. I'm representing Krishna, so I shouldn't have one white Rolls Royce, I should have 10. White Rolls Royce. So I'll expect 10 the next time I'm coming into Heathrow Airport. So he was driven away in a white roller. Actually, there is one little story, you know, just for the day that's in it, and, you know, we're celebrating. So I was told this story is true. I don't believe it's true, and maybe you can confirm with me after I've told it. But just because we're talking about fancy cars and driving and all of that, one story that I was told one time was the Pope talking about religious leaders. The one from Poland, Pope John Paul, who actually, funnily enough, actually just on that point, I actually went to one of his thank you very much, one of his events back in 1979. That's why I couldn't put my hand up for more than 40 years. Back in 1979 in a place called Galway in the west of Ireland, and he came, and that was particularly for the young people. I was young then. I guess we were all young once. And of course, Krishna's Navayovana, that's the... and he came. The first thing he said actually was, young people of Ireland, I love you. You know? And everyone's so impressed. It's very interesting actually how people, Prabhupada talked about his books being, you know, the law books for the next 10,000 years, and that this society has to be based on that philosophy. It's so important. But on a day-to-day, practical level, so much of the communication with people is more based on an emotional platform. So him coming up and saying, young people of Ireland, I love you, he gets a big cheer because people like those kind of touchy-feely kind of comments. Anyway, that Pope. He arrived in America. He was the traveling pope. He was the first pope to go in Sankirtan. So he traveled all around the world. So he went to America one time. And when he landed at the airport and all the pomp and ceremony was finished and it was over, and he got in his car, a nice big car like Prabhupada's white roller. And when he got in that car, he was being driven to wherever his destination was, wherever he was staying. And then, so they get away from all the hustle and bustle of the people at the airport and all of that, and they're just out. He's just in the car with a driver and a personal assistant, and he's sitting in the back, and the windows are blacked out and all of that. And at one point he says to the driver, he says, oh, ever since I was a little boy growing up in, where did he grow up in? We'll say Warsaw. I don't know if he was from Warsaw, but anyway, ever since I was a little boy growing up in Warsaw, I have always wanted to drive on the freeways of America. It's always become, growing up in communist Poland, it was always a sense of liberation if you could drive on the big, wide, eight-laned freeways of America. So now I'm here as an old man, but I still have that desire. Would it be possible to do that? And the driver said, hey, you're El Papa. You know, you can do whatever you want. So the driver pulls over, and they exchange positions, and the Pope starts driving the car, and the driver's in the back with the Pope's assistant, and he's driving along, and because he's wanted to do it all his life, he gets carried away. he gets completely carried away. So he gets carried, he drives, and he breaks the speed limit. And next thing, a motorbike cop comes up with the lights and indicates for them to pull over. So they pull over. The windows are blacked out, so the motorbike policeman knows nothing. Pulls him over. Then he indicates for the window to be rolled down. The window is rolled down, and he sees the Pope. And the policeman just happens to be a Catholic as well. So he thinks he's committed a mortal sin. You know, it's the equivalent of our Vaishnav apparat. You know, he's pulled over the Pope for speeding. So he pulls him over, and he gets all flustered and disturbed. He says, "Oh, just wait 1 minute." And he goes to the back of the car, and he has his radio, and he rings his office. He says, "Oh, sergeant or whatever boss," he rang back at the office. He says, "Oh, I think I've made a terrible mistake." And he says, "Oh, what have you done?" He says, "I pulled over somebody very important for speeding." He says, "Well, that's okay. I mean, how important?" He says, "Oh, very, very important." He says, "Oh, have you pulled over a senator?" He says, no, much more important than that." He says, "More important?" He says, "Have you pulled over a congressman?" He says, no, much more important than that." "More important?" He says, have you pulled over the vice president?" He says, no, much more important than that." He says, "Oh, have you pulled over the president?" He says, no, much more important than that." He says, "Oh, my God, who have you pulled over?" And he says, "I don't know, but he has the Pope as a chauffeur." So, I don't, like I said at the beginning, I don't necessarily believe that's true, but anyway. So Srila Prabhupada, he was picked up in a white roller, and he was brought to Tittenhurst. When he got there, he was greeted, I think, by just two of the Beatles. I think it was John Lennon and George Harrison. And Prabhupada gave George Harrison a garland. It's interesting. It's almost like from that moment, George was kind of like the chosen one. You know, Prabhupada, you know, very perceptively was obviously seeing, you know, the heart of George Harrison. And he gave them that garland. And then he congratulated them on being in line with Krishna and in line with the Krishna consciousness movement and in line with Prabhupada's mission by congratulating them for promoting peace. I'm not sure, like I said, I wasn't a Beatles fan, so I'm not sure the chronological order of their records, but I'm assuming that they must have already had that song out, "Give Peace a Chance," if that's what Prabhupada was saying, because he was connecting with that. And of course we know Bhaktaramya Gitapasam Savaloka Maheshwaram. That verse Prabhupada uses to talk about the peace formula. And he's kind of almost promoting George and John Lennon at that time to that level of doing that. So Prabhupada came. He stayed at Tittenhurst. There are many nice stories about his stay at Tittenhurst in different books that I'm sure you've read. The Footsteps in the Grass, the Yamuna. They've got the other one, Walking in the Cornfield. Through the cornfield was very high, hadn't been harvested yet, but the tracks, there have been some tracks in it from a tractor or whatever, and walking in that cornfield at the very early morning, that time when the sun has risen but you haven't seen the sun. Of course, you know, in this part of the world, you know, you even when the sun is high in the sky, you often don't see it. Actually, Prabhupada said that about England. He said, because England always gets criticized for its weather and whatever, but he did say at one time that England, there is no more beautiful place on earth than England when the sun shines. The only problem being it doesn't shine that often. But anyway, so he's in the cornfield, and it's that time in the morning when the sun shines, but you haven't seen it yet. But you know it's coming because day has broken, and that the darkness of night is beginning to lift like that. So it was at that time in the morning. And there was some kind of hill in the cornfield, in the middle of the cornfield, and Prabhupada and the devotees he was with, they walked up on top of the hill so they could see over the top of the corn. And Prabhupada said, "Oh, what a beautiful time of day. Did you know that this is the time of day that Lord Chaitanya goes on Sankirtan? He goes out on the Harinam Sankirtan at this time of day." And of course, I'm sure most of you, if not all of you, have been to India. You can understand why you go out on Sankirtan at that time of day. Because any later, the very first time I ever went to India, the very, very first time, and we went on Pradakram. and the program, of course, was left after Mangal Arati. But by the time you were coming back, it was kind of midday time. It was the peak of the day. And I wore no head, you know, freshly shaved head, of course, because you're going to India, so, you know, a nice freshly shaved head, whatever. And I'm out there walking on Parikram, you know, from whenever the sun rose at 6 o'clock in the morning or whatever, through to midday, 6 hours of the, and I came back, you know, and in the afternoon I just said my head was on fire, you know, and like the next morning it was all big blister for some. So that's why Lord Chaitanya would go out in Sangirtan early in the morning like that. And when Prabhupada was telling that story, he raised his hands in the air, and he did the Swami step, the first example of Prabhupada teaching the devotees the Swami step. So wonderful, wonderful memories of Srila Prabhupada coming to the UK, starting the movement here. And of course, you know, Prabhupada was on the transcendental platform, and, you know, in one sense he would make no distinction between our movement starting and spreading in any part of the world. He talked about Mauritius being the place where could conceivably become the first place on the planet that would be a Krishna conscious country. He talked like that. And he talked different things in different countries. But for it, for the UK, that there was an extra special connection simply because of the historical connection between the UK and India. So for Prabhupada, it was an extremely significant place, important place, and also something that he could relate to personally from growing up. After all, when he first met Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur and asked his first question, he made reference to Indian independence, because Prabhupada, prior to meeting Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, he had been a Gandayan. Is that how you say that? A Gandayan? Gandhian, thank you. That sounds better than Gandayan, thank you. Gandhian, okay. I probably just insulted all the followers of Gandhi around the world. But anyway, a Gandhian, he was a Gandhian. So those things were kind of... those connections, you know, made it even extra special for Prabhupada establishing the Hare Krishna movement here in the UK. He even renamed, I think, Tittenhurst. How many devotees here have been to Tittenhurst, by the way? That's interesting, because it is actually, in that sense, it's kind of like a tirtha, you know, it's kind of like a holy dam, like Prabhupada actually stayed there. I've never been there myself either, but interesting that very few. But he renamed it Ramuna Gopinath, meaning that which Krishna steals for his devotees, because you know what devotees are like. Of course, we shouldn't take advantage of this, but, you know, there tends to be that instinctive thing that when devotees move into a place, even if they're just guests, you know, and particularly if they outnumber the hosts, you know, before you know it, you know, it's like a temple, you know, and you have the laundry hanging over the balconies and, you know, all of those kind of pastimes that we tend to have, you know, water on the bathroom floor. That's a great one, you know, the water on the bathroom floor, you know. anytime you see water on the bathroom floor, you know that there has been a devotee here in the last, you know, half an hour. Actually, Prabhupada, where was that? Where did that? Was that Singapore Airport, was it, when he was waiting? Was it Singapore Airport? Singapore, by the way, was the only country in the world. Devaki was mentioning Prabhupada circumambulated the globe 11 times. Singapore was the only country where Prabhupada was refused entry. How unfortunate is that as a country? You know, you think, you know, you refused entry to the pure devotee. Amazing. Anyway, I think it was in Singapore Airport when he was waiting for that decision to be made. I think, maybe I'm wrong, but maybe it was some other airport. But Prabhupada had been traveling an awful long time. And you know, when you're traveling an awful long time and you have time in an airport, the first thing at least that crosses my mind is there any possibility that I can have a shower? Now, nowadays, that's a lot easier. I remember... must have been about 15 years ago, maybe more, I was coming back on a flight from India through Dubai, and I was on the plane with one devotee, Manu, from Ireland, and also Mahadudi Prabhu and Jainatai Prabhu, who was back to James at the time, and we were coming back on that flight, and I couldn't believe it. We landed in Dubai, and there were showers, so we went to have a shower, and you walk into the shower room, and it was like, it was nearly as big as this temple room. It was like, wow. But that wasn't the case in the 70s when Prabhupada was around. So he took shower from a sink, you know. So you can just imagine how difficult that was, you know, doing such a thing. Anyway, that just came to my mind about devotees and water on the ground. So Prabhupada, he came, and all of these things now that are second nature to so many people. You know, we talk about yoga, we talk about meditation, we talk about mantra, we talk about diet, we talk about vegetarianism. You know, Prabhupada actually was the first owner of the first chain of vegetarian restaurants that ever existed. He was the first person to do that. Now you have so many of them and whatever, but Prabhupada actually was the first, you know, owner of a chain of vegetarian restaurants around the world. I'm not sure, you said there was 108 temples when Prabhupada left. There were X amount of restaurants as well. I'm not sure exactly what that figure was of restaurants, but you can be sure it was well into double figures, you know. And that was, in 1977 when Prabhupada left, name me another vegetarian restaurant. What to speak of a chain of vegetarian restaurants like that, you know. So this is all coming from Prabhupada. And of course, if you look at diet now, the governments, including the British government, it seems like they are just, you know, millimeters away, if that's the right measurement. It's not really, but anyway, millimeters away from telling the country, the population of this country, that you must be vegetarian. Literally, that they want to do that. They know they should do that. They stop themselves because they don't want to be accused of being a nanny state. But that is the message they really want to give, just to tell people you have to be vegetarian. Now, of course, some of you have been here for 10 years, some have 20 years, some 30, some 40, like that. So however long you've been here, you've been a vegetarian. Now, of course, we're vegetarian, or prasadamtarians, not because it's good for the environment, but because it's the right thing to do. Because Krishna tells us it's the right thing to do, and all of the acharyas tell us it's the right thing to do. That's why, before I'd even heard the word environment, like literally before I'd even heard that word, I don't know when it started actually. I think it started about 10, 15 years ago when they talked about the ozone layer. I think that, you know, we first heard this thing, the ozone layer, that we had never heard of before. But, you know, you go back 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, 50 years, when ISKCON was incorporated, I'd never heard the word the environment. Yet, the first day that I stayed in a Hare Krishna temple, Jai Shishi Radha Gokulananda Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Shishi Gonatai Ki. And as the curtains are opened and we see the absolutely extraordinary sight of the presiding deities of Bhaktivedanta Manor, that sight would be not available to us if it wasn't for Prabhupada coming and ISKCON being incorporated in the UK 50 years ago. This would not be happening. Bhaktivedanta Manor, of course, as you know, came, you know, 3 or 4 years later. But it all started with Prabhupada setting foot and getting ISKCON incorporated. So yeah, so what was I saying? I was talking about the environment. So that my first ever day that I stayed in a Hare Krishna temple, in those days, I'm sure there's some of us who still do, those days the alarm used to go off at 1:30 in the morning. Sometimes if you had a compassionate Sankirtan leader or temple president, it would go off at 1:45, you know. You know, but then he'd be on your case all day long because he'd given you an extra 15 minutes, you know, to sleep. You know, anyway, alarm goes off. You go into the bathroom, and of course, you know, the first thing that you do is you wash your teeth. That laptop looks like the laptop of a deprived personality. It looks like it's really struggling. Yeah. I'll put it. I guess we'll do it at the end now because first day staying, into the bathroom, brushing my teeth. How many times have you done it? Have you left the water running when you're brushing your teeth? How many people have ever done that, left the water running when they're brushing their teeth? Thank you. The only Brahmin in the room. I just do not believe that only one person has ever done that in their life. I'm sorry. I just do not accept that. Anyway, I did it on my first day. And some devotee, can't remember who it was, came in after me, a few minutes after me, leans over my shoulder, turns off the tap in a very, you know, it wasn't one of those taps, it was one of the turn ones, you know, turns off the tap in a very, you know, authoritative way and says, Prabhu, you're wasting Krishna's energy. That's like in 1981 or something, you know, so This was, as I say, before the... So it's the right thing to do. It's Krishna's energy. We don't waste Krishna's energy. The diet we follow is the right diet to follow because it's what Krishna tells us, what the Acharya tells us, and that's why we do it. All these people now are catching up related to other issues, whether it be environment, this, that, or the other, but it's the right thing to do. And that gives, personally gives me, you know... And they're just minor things in the greater scheme of things, but they're just things that just reinforce again and again and underscore again and again, put down a more solid foundation, if you could possibly have a more solid foundation, to know that we are following a person, because specifically we are following Prabhupada, because without Prabhupada, we would know nothing. Literally, we would know. None of us would be here. Actually, none of us would be sitting here today without Prabhupada. So much security in knowing that this person, based on his connection with the previous acharyas and ultimately the connection with Krishna, everything is right. Everything that we hear from Prabhupada is correct and right like that, and we can take great faith in that. Okay, so what I wanted to do, because it is the incorporation, and as I say, sometimes there's an element of struggle with this whole thing about the incorporation. And because, in essence, it's a legal thing. Or you can make an argument to say it's a legal thing. Okay? But let me just read a couple of things. You may be familiar with some of these. But let me just read a couple of things from Srila Prabhupada as it relates to the incorporation. In 1966, I started this movement. I just said Prabhupada was right all the time. Now Prabhupada is saying something that's wrong. You know, he started the movement surely in 1965 when he left Chittapur Dock in Calcutta, getting onto the Jaladuta and then arriving 6 weeks later in America. That's when he started the movement. And, you know, all the records say that that event took place in 1965. Yet here Prabhupada says, in 1966... I started this movement after incorporation in New York City. So that Prabhupada spoke those words in April 71 at a lecture, in a Panda lecture in India. So he's not even in the UK, or he's not in America when he's saying that. He's in India, and he's saying, I started this movement in 1966 after incorporating in New York. So obviously Prabhupada is attaching great importance to the incorporation because he's connecting it to when he started the movement. Now the legal document of incorporation under the Company Act has been examined by me, and I think it is all right. I have made a little change, and you can do the needful. So by showing this legal document, you can immediately occupy some magnificent temple house. Again, this property that we're sitting in is owned by ISKCON. Actually, I think Devaki said ISKCON UK. Now, I know that Devaki is very rarely... Sorry, I know that Devaki is never wrong. But she's wrong. There is no such thing as ISKCON UK, just to let you know. Because it's the first incorporation of ISKCON in the UK, it's simply ISKCON. It's ISKCON. It's not ISKCON UK, it's ISKCON. So... this property that we're sitting in, Bhaktivedanta Manor, is owned by ISKCON. And I think this qualifies as you can immediately occupy some magnificent temple house. And of course, it's getting even more magnificent in the context of the Haveli and the different developments. But the point is that without a structure that we can cooperate around, that we can coalesce around, that we can build around, without a structure, we really go nowhere. And you will see in the history of the world, without organization, actually Prabhupada famously said, you probably know that story, morning walk in Vrindavan. Prabhupada was so brilliant, you know, how he trained up his followers, his disciples. He would always challenge them with difficult questions, whether they were organizational questions or whether they were philosophical questions or whatever type of questions they were. He would really challenge them with questions. So he's with a few of his disciples. One of them was Giriraj Maharaj, who tells this story beautifully, and a few others. And Prabhupada is saying, so how will this movement go on after I have left? And the devotees are thinking, you can just imagine the devotees thinking, and they're probably thinking, you know, I want to come up with the best answer, you know. I want to come up with the answer that Prabhupada says, yes, correct. So they're all racking their brains to come up, you know. And of course, they're all very sincere. So that you get different responses from different devotees, but a lot of the responses are on the same theme. Oh, you know, we have to be very serious in our sadhana, Prabhupada. When we chant Hare Krishna, when we chant our japa, we have to, you know, be remembering Krishna's name and not just doing it mechanically and all those types of questions. And they gave, you know, 3, 4, 5, 10 answers, whatever it was. And then Prabhupada stops. You always know Prabhupada's going to deliver, you know, the kind of conclusion, you know, when he stops. You know, he actually stops. And then they all stop with him, you know. And Prabhupada stops and he says, no, to all of the answers, no. This movement will only continue with organization and intelligence. So interesting. Doesn't mean there is that wonderful story, Shyamasundar, and we'll show a film with Shyamasundar, who in that sense is the father of the UK Yatra, along with the other six. But, you know, Shyamasundar, that story when some devotees, Prabhupada was arriving a few days later or whatever, and some devotees were concerned about Shyamasundar sadhana. And they arranged a meeting with Srila Prabhupada in his room, and they met with him, and the devotees presented that, oh, they're very concerned about Shyamasundar because they're with him all day, and, you know, they're with him all day, and their conclusion is that he is not chanting his rounds. He's definitely not chanting his rounds. And Prabhupada's response was, did Arjuna have a bead bag on the battlefield of Kurukshetra? So that reference from Prabhupada, and the reference, no, this movement, all the devotees saying, better sadhana, better sadhana, better sadhana, and Prabhupada saying, no, it will go on by organization and intelligence, doesn't, of course, mean that Prabhupada, I think if you type into the Veda base the phrase 16 rounds and 4 regulative principles, I think you get more hits for that phrase in the Veda base than any other phrase, 16 rounds and 4 regulative principles. So it's not that Prabhupada is suggesting that we don't have good sadhana and that we don't focus on that like that. But at the same time, he's putting everything in context. So ISKCON won't just continue by, because in one sense, if it was just based on sadhana, you would be expecting Krishna to do all the work somehow or another, you know. So it has to also be based on other things. And Prabhupada stopped very firmly, looked at all the devotees on that morning walk and said, no. This movement will continue by organization and intelligence. And that is so much underscored, actually, by Prabhupada arriving in New York City in September also, September 1965, right? Get all the dates right. Yes, September 1965. In July 1966, the reference to this first piece that I read about in 1966, I started this movement. That was in July 1966. That's when Prabhupada incorporated ISKCON in New York City. 9 months after he arrived, he was 70 years of age at this point. He had never been outside of India in his entire life. He goes to America, which of course isn't even a Commonwealth country. So in that sense, their laws are significantly different than they would be in the UK and other Commonwealth countries. Yet a 70-year-old man, after 9 months of being in this completely new environment, had set up a legal entity under religious law. It's quite extraordinary. So Prabhupada's thinking, and by the way, there's another reference here which I'll preempt now, that when Prabhupada established ISKCON in July 1966 in New York City, he had not initiated one single devotee. Devaki just told us that he initiated 299 here in the UK, 200 men, 99 women. We'd probably be a more effective movement if it was 200 women and 99 men, but anyway. But that's just a nice comment for that side of the audience. I'll try to say something nice on this side at some point. Okay. But he had not initiated one single disciple in July 1966, yet he is establishing ISKCON. So this was his first disciple. This was his first initiation, the incorporation of ISKCON. I don't know how that sounds to you, but for me it sounds extremely significant that he had done that before he had initiated anybody. And on top of that, he was 70 years of age in a completely new country. You know, I don't know how many of you are currently responsible for any legal entities, directors, etc., of a legal entity. It's such a headache. It is such a headache, you know, having to keep up with all the different administration and legalities of it and all the other stuff. It's a headache. Yet Prabhupada is taking that headache on as an Indian national at 70 years of age, just 9 months after he arrives in a completely new country and before he initiated any devotees. Okay. So far, incorporating our center is concerned. I think you should do it immediately. And if you want, you can take a copy of the incorporation either from New York or from London and simply present a copy of our incorporation and get it registered now. You know, sometimes Prabhupada, when you hear his instructions and in letters and conversations, sometimes they're kind of couched in you know, this is a good thing to do. You know, I would advise you. I think for you this would be nice. None of that is in these statements. These statements are kind of absolute instructions. You know, there's no wiggle room. Oh, Prabhupada, I don't think incorporation is so important. Could you imagine? Could you imagine, like, this devotee up with Shivananda? Could you imagine Shivananda's response to Prabhupada? Oh, I don't think incorporation is so important, Prabhupada. You know, it just, you know, he wouldn't have said it, of course, but if he did, you know, you could just imagine what Prabhupada's response would be. Okay, I'm sure some of you will maybe disciples of this personality. So this is one. My dear Jai Pataka, you have done a great service by incorporating our society in Canada. Please immediately send a copy to Chidananda in Vancouver branch so that he can do the needful also. So again, that word, you've done a great job. How many of us would like to be told by Prabhupada, you know, that we've done a great job. We've done something, and Prabhupada says, you've done a great job. Wow. You know, it's kind of like, you know, we've reached the perfection of our lives. So you've done a great job. Please immediately send a copy to Chidananda so he can also do the needful. Next one. He had initiated the legal work of incorporation that spring while still living on the Bowery. It's like, it's just, again, it's an extraordinary thing, you know. Generally, by our material circumstance, you know, if we're not on the transcendental platform, we feel more confident to do things when we're kind of comfortable and confident and secure, or somewhat secure. You can never be secure in the material world, but somewhat secure in our material circumstance. It gives us kind of a little confidence and whatever. We can maybe be a little bold like that. Prabhupada's living in the Bowery. You know, there's that story about the journalist coming to the Bowery, and the Bowery, the room that Prabhupada was in, as I understand it, you know, and it could be a little hazy on it, but as I understand it, it was just a kind of quite a big room, maybe a room like this, maybe even bigger. And it was kind of subdivided, and different people were staying in different parts of it, and the subdivisions were really just curtains, you know, like in a hospital, you know, you pull the curtain around for a little bit of privacy, you know. So Prabhupada's over in one corner of this room in the Bowery, you know, with the curtain pulled around, and eventually the journalist, and the other people in the room, by the way, 1965, 66, New York City, Lower East End. I mean, even if you go to the Lower East End of New York City now, it's like pretty bohemian. You know, you can imagine what it was like, you know, in the 65, 66 when Prabhupada was there. So all the other people in the room, you know, they're experimenting, let's say, with different substances, you know, to figure out the goal of life kind of thing. So they're kind of all over the place. You know, you don't know, you wouldn't know what universe they're in, what to speak of, what planet, what country or what city. So Prabhupada's in one corner. Eventually, the journalist makes his way after seeing all these other interesting personalities as he makes his way to Prabhupada. And his first question or comment to Prabhupada is, oh, are these your friends? And Prabhupada says, don't know them. Don't know anything about them. So that's where Prabhupada's living. And this is when he's starting to work on incorporating ISKCON. I mean, you know, the kind of, first off, from that point of view, first off, the vision is extraordinary. Like, he had that conversation with the gentleman on the park bench, you know, and said, oh, time separates. I see so many temples, so many books, etc. But also, the absolute confidence and conviction that it doesn't matter what his material circumstance is, you know, he's taking shelter of Krishna. He's under Krishna's shelter. Therefore, his confidence is unlimited like that. Yeah, amazing. Okay, a few more, and then I want to go back to my subject that I haven't forgotten about Prabhupada is no ordinary guru. So he wrote to some gentleman, Hanuman Prashad Potter, practically I've experienced that this Krishna consciousness movement can solve all the problems of the world. And to this end, I've systematically established the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. The purpose of the society are stated with ISKCON's Articles of Incorporation drawn up on the 11th of July, and we have them up there. There's part of them, the seven purposes of ISKCON. So again, you know, to change the world. This movement will change the world. Can solve all the problems of the world. And I have established ISKCON. And he talks about the incorporation and the purposes of incorporation. So Prabhupada is linking saving the world or solving all the problems of the world with the incorporation of his ISKCON. I think those statements alone. Let's go one more. Oh yeah, well, this is the one I was going to read, and it about the initiation. At the time of incorporation, Srila Prabhupada had not attracted even one committed follower. Undeterred, he enlisted volunteers from among the small group of regular attendees at his evening lectures to act as ISKCON's first trustees. So again, you know, the first thing that he did before he even initiated anybody. Next one, it is very good that you have registered the society. It is very important. So all of those references to the incorporation and the importance of incorporating ISKCON, and that is what we're commemorating today. Obviously, 50 years ago, it didn't fall on a Sunday, because I doubt that Company's House would have opened on a Sunday, but it is exactly 50 years ago today. And just before I go on to that the subject of Prabhupada being no ordinary guru, I just want to read something else that I find incredibly, I find it connected to this subject and incredibly interesting. At least I found it incredibly interesting. Of course, I'm probably an oddball and you'll probably find it incredibly boring. But anyway, maybe one or two of you in the audience will be an oddball like me. This, I mean, it's so unfair for me to say, have a guess what this is, you know, because it's virtually impossible for you to guess what this is. Actually, if you guess what this is, you probably should buy a lottery ticket. But this, these are the words, let me do it this way, these are the words of Jiva Goswami. Jiva Goswami, obviously, is one of the six Goswamis. He is like the philosophical acharya of our tradition. So these are the words of Jiva Goswami. Hail Sri Krishna and Sri Radha, who yearn to confer happiness upon one another. On day two of the dark half month of Magha Shirsha in the Samvat year 1663, AD 1606. Can somebody tell me when the British first went to India? It's in the 1700s, right? Sometime in the 1700s, right? Because it was about 250 years. You take that from 1947, take that from 1950, you get 1700, about 1700. So this is like approximately 100 years before the British came to India. In the Samvat year of 1663, AD 1606, this is the will and testament of Jiva, a resident of Sri Vrindavan and a follower of the lotus feet of their reverences, the happily named Sri Sanatan and Sri Rupa. This entire undertaking of mine, it's a lot longer than these two pages, by the way. I'm just reading one paragraph. This entire undertaking of mine is all for the sake of facilitating the service to this Sri Krishna and this Sri Radha, who are manifest as the glorious idols which I worship. And that service is conveyed in the first instance to Sri Valastas, a holy man, entirely intent upon the supreme truth. Therefore, all materials that have been collected as a means of serving them are to be deemed to belong to Sri Valastas in direct succession to me. So this is Jiva Goswami. This is identified as the first will. It is. It's identified as the first will. There may be others, but it's identified as the first will that was pre-British. Once the British came, wills became more common, and they were influenced by British law and all of that. But this has nothing to do with the Brits. You know, this is Jiva Goswami. You know, roughly 100 years prior to them coming, and he's writing a will, and he's writing a will, giving all his assets to this devotee, Sri Valastas, a holy man entirely intent upon the supreme truth. basically so that the assets that Jiva Goswami are leaving will be used in the service of Hail Sri Krishna and Sri Radha. We don't use that word generally, hail, but there's Jiva Goswami using that word, you know, Hail Sri Krishna and Sri Radha. So it's just interesting. This is Jiva Goswami and he's leaving a will, you know. So these things are important, all the references I've read in relation to Srila Prabhupada and the incorporation. I did actually print out a copy also of Srila Prabhupada's own will, which I won't get into now because I think we're probably a little tight for time. So I won't get into that now. But don't think that these things are not important. And actually, just on that point, as devotees, you know, we also, particularly as Grihastha devotees, are likely to accumulate some assets throughout our life. And maybe I could make this kind of appeal, and something that I'm implementing myself, that as devotees of the Hare Krishna movement, for many, many decades now, we will have heard of the formula that was given to us by Rupa Goswami, that as Grihasthas, we should give 50% for preaching, 25% for family, 25% for emergencies. That's the basic breakdown. I think there are very, very few devotees in our movement that do that while they're living. And while we won't get into that discussion as to why that is the case, it is actually challenging. And is it net? Is it gross? Is it this? Is it that? And you can get into all the details. And it seems like you have so many expenses to cover in life. And, you know, it just seems inconceivable that you would be able to give 50% of your, if you're just an average kind of Joe, you know, that you'd be able to give 50% of your Lakshmi. So I think we struggle with it. And I don't think so many devotees actually do it like that. But I think as it relates to our... Oh, we have a devotee who does that. We should. We should fall at your feet, Prabhu. I'm surprised that the demigods are not flowering or showering you with flowers right now. You know, of course, it is Vishwambar Prabhu that's giving the information, so maybe it's a little dodgy. You know, okay. Yeah. I know. You can take the man out of Napoli, but you can't take the Napolitan out of the man. Yeah. No, I know. I'm only joking. That's wonderful. But generally, I think devotees struggle. But in terms of what we leave behind, I would say to the degree that we're not able to follow that instruction, if you want to call it that, from Rupa Goswami in life, I think we all can achieve that in death. I don't think that's complicated at all. You know, that we leave... Actually, I suppose you could do 50% for your family and 50% for the movement, because you don't really need emergencies when you're dead. You won't be able to get near that bank account when you've gone, you know. Unless they have online facilities wherever you go, you know, I don't know. You can just imagine leaving your body and going somewhere, and the first thing you do, is there an internet connection here? I just want to check my balance on it. So you probably don't need emergencies. So I think it's a relatively, in death, I think it's a relatively easy thing. And we would be able to follow Rupa Goswami's instruction in that regard, you know. So just a thought, you know. But you can see all these things are so important. You know, as Grihasthas, we have families, but we don't know what our families will do with whatever we leave to them. That's also a very important consideration. It's a difficult balance to get that, because obviously they are family, and Prabhupada actually in his will, there are 9 clauses, okay? 9 clauses in Prabhupada's will, which is a good number as well, right? A Vedic kind of number, 9. Anyway, there are 9 clauses. The first clause, seven are all about the same subject. 2 are different, the first one and the last one. The first one is that the GBC body will be and is the ultimate managing authority for the Hare Krishna movement in perpetuity. That's the first clause. Then the other 7 clauses, next 7 clauses, are all about property. It's quite amazing. They're all about property, you know, and how the property has to be protected and kept for Krishna and kept for ISKCON and maintained and all of those things. So the next 7 clauses are all about property. This is Prabhupada. This is our no ordinary guru, Srila Prabhupada. And then the last one is he makes a small provision for his own family. So, you know, there is an understanding that, you know, if you have family, that you have to make some kind of arrangement for them. But in the context of a devotee and our service to Krishna, we have to balance that with two things. One, the service that we want to give to Krishna in terms of whatever assets we may have. And two, how whatever we leave to our family may not be to our benefit, you know, because they may use it in a way that isn't necessarily conducive to Krishna consciousness. So, you know, I think this idea of trying to follow Rupa Goswami's instruction, at least as it relates to what we leave behind, it should be something that we give serious consideration to. Okay, so, Srila Prabhupada. Somebody wrote in a Vyasa Puja offering, some years ago, and the end of it, they said, they were also mentioning the incorporation of ISKCON, and the very last sentence they wrote was, there would be no incorporation without your journey. So obviously we can't and don't and we don't want to disconnect those two events, you know, the incorporation of ISKCON, but Prabhupada's journey. And obviously, you know, if Prabhupada hadn't come to America, ISKCON would not have been incorporated in America, and then it would not have been incorporated in the UK, etc., etc. So I just want to finish by reflecting a little bit on that journey that Prabhupada took in 1965, and also the point about him being no ordinary guru. Every year, we have Srila Prabhupada's Vyasa Puja, and I don't know, maybe you can Google it, but I don't know how many Vyasa Puja ceremonies take place in the world each year. For even if we took the four Sampradayas, bona fide Sampradayas, how many Vyasa Puja ceremonies would take place each year for all the different spiritual masters within those Sampradayas? But I would imagine that it's well into the thousands, maybe tens of thousands of Vyasa Pujas that take place. But in the context of Gaudiya Vaishnavism and Gaudiya Vaishnava history, I would, you know, present that there is no more important Vyasa Puja than Srila Prabhupada's, simply because of what he did that nobody else has done. Nobody else has done that before him, and nobody else has certainly done that since him. And also, what he did in terms of the journey was one thing, and then establishing ISKCON. But then, as Devaki said in her introduction, that when Prabhupada left, we had 108 centers. You know, I accept that on good faith. It's a very convenient number, but it definitely was in and around 108, and that's the figure that we kind of settle on. But 3 years ago, in the 50th anniversary of ISKCON, Prabhupada's journey in 65, 66, so when we were celebrating the 50th anniversary of ISKCON, I think the figure that we put, the official figure that we put out conservative figures because we didn't want to be overly, you know, we didn't want to be exaggerating and certainly not overly exaggerating so people could point out to us, hang on a second, you know. So we were conservative with the figures. And I think the figure that we put out, I look to you because you're the 50th expert, I think it was 700, was it 700? 650. Just see, I'm exaggerating already, you know. I'm sure it's 700 now. So 650. So that in and of itself is a significant thing, because that is more than six times the centers that were present when Prabhupada left. By the way, you can be certain that if Prabhupada was with us now, he would be disappointed with that figure, and he would think we should have a lot more. But still, at least it's going in the right direction. It's increasing. And that also is an absolutely glorious legacy for anybody, not just to start something, but to be able to, when they leave, for it to grow and expand. Because so many times when people start something, when they leave, within a very short period of time, everything collapses and disappears. But so far, Srila Prabhupada, what he left he left it in such a way. And of course, I'm sure you've heard this before. Bhakti Trumarj visits the UK on a regular basis, and this is one of the subjects he just absolutely loves to talk about. The reason for that legacy being successful is that first clause in Srila Prabhupada's will, that the authority is the GBC body, which is a collective group of people. If Prabhupada had left it just to one person, the strong assumption, he didn't do it, so we can't know for certain, but the strong assumption is that it would have all collapsed, because if you just put it on one person's shoulders, if they run into trouble and difficulty and they go away, then everything is lost. But when you actually have a collective group, that collective group are never going to collectively all go get into trouble together. It's just not going to happen. So therefore, the continuity, it's been able to continue, and it's built in not just the centers, but the amount of followers that we have, et cetera, and people who consider the Hare Krishna movement to be their religion, so to speak. Prabhupada not being an ordinary guru. There are these references that I came familiar with not too long before the 50th anniversary, but references. One of them is in the Padma Purana, and the verse is, Idam stanam padichaja videsham gamyate maya. And this is a conversation that took place between Bhakti Devi and Narada Muni. Dating it, I asked a few devotees who kind of are good at this kind of thing, people like Banu Swami, and he said, what we can say is that it's at least 5,200 years old, because that's when we know that we had the Padma Purana in written form like that. But it could be a lot longer than that, but it's difficult to actually, you know, precisely say that with clear factual evidence, but we're very safe to say it is in excess of 5,200 years ago that conversation took place. So, Idam stanam padichaja videsham gamyate maya. And Bhakti Devi is saying to Narada Muni, I will leave this place. And this place was Vrindavan, because that's where this conversation was taking place. So I will leave this place, but we can put in the word Vrindavan, because the conversation took place in Vrindavan. I will leave this place, Vrindavan, and I will travel to faraway lands. When I ever talk about this, I talk about being in school, just down the road, actually, in Slough, it was a good place for me to be born, you know, Slough. A teacher showing us one day that if you take the Earth, the globe, and you put a knitting needle through London, and you go straight through the globe without any deviation, you go straight through, you come out in Australasia. That's where you come out. So Australasia is the furthest point away from the UK as far as the globe of the planet is concerned. If you do that with India, if you put the needle through Delhi and go straight through without deviating, you go straight through the globe, you come out in America. That's where you come out. So Prabhupada couldn't have gone to a further away land than America from India. So I will leave this place, Vrindavan. Prabhupada was residing in the Radha Damodar temple in Vrindavan. And I will travel to faraway lands. Prabhupada traveled to America, the furthest away land you could. And I will spread, or I will preach, the glories of Srimad Bhagavatam. We know when Prabhupada left, he had few belongings, you know, a change of clothes, you know, he carried some granola with him, some grain with him. He carried an umbrella for, you know, East Coast of America. If he'd been coming to England, he probably would have carried two umbrellas, or one of those big ones. You know. So he had a few incidental things like that. We understood he had 80 rupees with him, but actually, we learned at the 50th anniversary celebrations in Calcutta 3 years ago, his son got up and spoke, and his son said, on the dock, when Prabhupada was just getting on the gangplank, to walk across the little piece of water, and you know, whatever, onto the Jaladuta, he stopped. He took out his wallet. He took out those 80 rupees, looked at them, took 40 of them, and handed the 40 rupees to his son. So he actually had 40 rupees. You know, again, no ordinary guru. Just the detachment is just fantastic. You know, you've got like 80 rupees. You know, and you're going on this journey into the unknown. You know, actually, the unknown for devotees not as much. Although I'm sure that we still can relate to it, but the unknown is the greatest fear for people. Actually, it's the unknown, and of course, that's why death is such a big thing for everybody, and they deal with it in different ways, blot it out, whatever. Because it's the unknown. They're not knowing what's happening next, you know, and whether it will be a good thing or whether it will be a not so good thing. They don't know that unknown. So there's also unknowns in our life like that. So this was a real unknown. I mean, Kerma called it in his book, he called it the great transcendental adventure. I mean, what a great adventure, let's say. Transcendental, of course, it's Prabhupada, but what a great adventure. You know, at 70 years of age, you're getting on this boat, and you know, let's face it, like I said about Dubai Airport 15 years ago, coming back through Dubai Airport, you go into a shower room and it's bigger than the house you live at home, you know, it's like, you know, the lap of luxury. This was not the lap of luxury. This wasn't an aeroplane even. This was a ship, but it wasn't a passenger ship. This was a cargo ship. And this wasn't going from Holyhead to Dublin or from Dover to Calais. Dover-Calais, I shouldn't mention that, should I? this was going from India to America on a cargo ship at the age of 70. How many people in the room are 70 or older? That was purely coincidence that my eyes fixed on you, Prabhu. You look no more than 17, not 70. But you didn't put your hand up, so you're not. So nobody put their hand up. We may have a few liars in the room, but, you know, giving them the benefit of the doubt. Nobody is Srila Prabhupada's age at this point in time. Okay? I'm 58. I'm sitting here now, and I know when I get up off this asan, it will take me approximately, you know, 90 seconds to 2 minutes for my knees to, you know, regain their normal ability, let's put it like that. I'm 58, you know. Prabhupada was 12 years older than me when he gets on a cargo boat for 6 weeks crossing the Atlantic. Didn't they get that girl over recently, the climate change girl from Sweden over recently, you know? And it's a whole big hoo-ha. They've got all these professionals. I think they even had to fly the people in to bring the thing back, which is like absolutely bizarre. But anyway, you know, it's a whole team effort, you know, the most modern kind of facility and this and that and whatever. Prabhupada's getting on a cargo boat for a 6-week journey at the age of 70. And as he's getting on that cargo boat, if there's any security and money, he's giving half of it away. It's just like, you know, just inconceivable. Then we know the journey, and you know the story so well, you know that Prabhupada had heart attacks on the way over, all of that kind of thing. And then, of course, what does he do when he arrives in America? He has his famous poem, you know, I have no idea why you've brought me here, Krishna. You can kind of just imagine, you know, I remember the first time I went to America myself. It was in 1986. I went for a Sankirtan festival in Gita Nagari, and we flew into JFK. And then we got a bus from JFK, actually into Manhattan, because then you had to get another bus from Manhattan to Pennsylvania, wherever the nearest town was. And I just remember when the bus was driving through Manhattan. It was my first time there, you know, and you're kind of looking out the window and you're straining your head up, you know, to see if you can see the top of the buildings, you know. It's a very, for me, it was really, I mean, I was like 23 or something, 24. It was extremely intimidating, you know, and I'm just on a bus being driven through the place, you know. Can you imagine? And I knew where I was going, you know, and I was with a couple of other devotees, you know, and we knew where we were going, you know, and that night we would be in the Hare Krishna temple in Gita Nagari for the Sankirtan festival the next day. But it's like, really kind of intimidating, you know. It's new and different and, you know, very different in many respects. So can you imagine all on your own, you know, 70 years of age? And American-British culture, there's so many similarities. You'll notice in America that you have Irish Americans, you have Italian Americans, you have Greek Americans, you've got all kinds of Americans. You don't have English Americans. And the reason you don't have English Americans is because the Americans are the English in that sense. They were the biggest group originally, you know, so that's why you don't have English Americans, you know. So it's very similar. In many respects, it's a similar country, but still intimidating. Can you imagine for somebody who had spent their whole life in India, comes there 70 years away. So he says, Krishna, I've no idea why you brought me here. I've no idea why I'm standing on this dock here looking at this place, you know. And it looks like everyone is completely absorbed in the modes of passion and ignorance, you know, and they look like they have absolutely zero interest, you know, in the message that I've come to give them. But hey, you know, if you want me to dance, you know, make me dance. This complete absorption and conviction. Prabhupada once had a conversation with his GBC members. I should remember the year, but I can't. Would have been in the 70s, because the GBC only existed from 72. So that, it was between 72 and 77 he had this conversation. And the title of the conversation that Prabhupada had with them was, Are You Convinced? And the subtitle of that conversation was, Are You Convinced that Krishna is God? He's asking his leading devotees, you know, who are going to take this movement on after him and continue. He's asking them, are you convinced that Krishna is God? And he's asking them that, by the way, because if you're not convinced Krishna is God, you are not going to convince anybody else. It just ain't going to happen, you know. So Prabhupada's conviction, solid, strong, unshakable, unrelenting conviction in Krishna and his dependence on Krishna and his faith in Krishna that whatever happens, it will all be absolutely fine. It's just extraordinary and something, again, I feel that we can take incredible strength from and conviction from. So that was... So since that happened... Oh, yeah, sorry. So I have to finish that part quickly. What time am I supposed to stop at, Devaki? Oh, right now. Okay. So the boss has spoken. Okay, real quick. Give me 5 minutes. Okay. So I will leave this place, Vrindavan. I will travel to faraway lands, and I will preach the glories of Bhagavatam. So I was just stuck there on what Prabhupada brought with him. So all of those things that he brought with him were relatively incidental things, clothes, umbrellas, whatever, all of that. But the one other thing that accompanied Prabhupada on the Jaladuta, on the way over from India, he had one trunk. And what was in the trunk? Srimad Bhagavatams. I mean, is that not extraordinary? Since Bhakti Devi spoke those words to Narada Muni, we have no knowledge. We know that Bhaktivinoda Thakur sent some books to the West. We know that Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj sent a couple of disciples to the West, but none of that gained any real traction. There was no traction in that. So since this conversation of Bhakti Devi to Narada Muni, we have no knowledge of anybody fulfilling that prediction of Bhakti Devi until 1965, over 5,000 and maybe a lot longer, but over 5,000 years later. What an extraordinary endorsement of Srila Prabhupada, and why I say he is and was no ordinary guru. This is not just he's another guru and someone else is a guru telling us this, that, and the other. He is no ordinary guru. And that was then further underscored 4,500 years later, or 500 years ago, 525 years ago, by Lord Chaitanya himself, when he spoke, Ebinam Sankatan Tikshna Kadaya Laya. He talks about, I have come, meaning Lord Chaitanya, as I'm pointing to myself, I have come, Lord Chaitanya, I have come with the sharp sword of Harinam Sankatan to cut out of the hearts. It's interesting as well, these kind of military, We know that Lord Chaitanya got chastised also for calling on the Sudarshan Chakra, but it's just interesting, the military kind of analogies. With the sharp sword of Harinam Sankirtan, to cut out of the hearts of all living entities their anartas like that, and why they're resisting to taking to the Sankirtan movement. And then he says, Yadi Papi Chadi Duradesha, 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 Duradharma Desha Yaya, Duradharma Desha Yaya, I think. Mora Sena Pati Bhakta. If any, I've come to cut out the heart of all the living entities, the anartas that are preventing them from engaging in the Sankirtan movement. But if any of those people escape my sharp sword of Harinam Sankirtan, if any of them escape that sharp sword, I will send my Senapati Bhakta to capture them. Sorry, if any escape my sharp sword and flee to faraway lands, that phrase again, to faraway lands, if any escape my sharp sword and flee to faraway lands, I will send my Senapati Bhakta to capture them. So between the words of Bhakti Devi to Narada Muni and the words of Lord Chaitanya, we should never, ever, ever, and this material world is powerful, Maya is powerful, because she's doing a job for Krishna, protecting the spiritual world from rascals trying to sneak back in with anartas and material desires, so she's doing a great service, but she is so powerful, that she can overcome us at any point. But let us remember, the words of Bhakti Devi, the words of Lord Chaitanya, and be able to take 100%, forget about our weaknesses. Our weaknesses are unimportant. And Srila Prabhupada, by the way, on the point of weaknesses, really had no issue with weaknesses as they related to sensual fall down. This is, he often said, this is Maya's kingdom, that is no surprise, continue with your service, Krishna will look after you. We just continue with our service. That's the main thing, continue with our service. He was more heavy, and that's why seven of the clauses in his will is all about property. He was more heavy about people, you know, using ISKCON assets or stealing from ISKCON. That was a much more serious thing for Prabhupada, and then philosophical deviation was even more serious again. So, but in terms of weaknesses on the sensual level, Prabhupada, you know, expected it like that. So whenever we're feeling weak, whenever we're feeling under attack by Maya, gain strength, take strength from quotes like that as to who the person we are following is. This is an extraordinary personality, a personality that literally will come once, not in a lifetime, you know, but once in whatever, you know, when will the next Prabhupada come? You know, maybe never, whatever, who knows? But it's an extraordinary rare thing. All of those references are there to give us strength and faith that it doesn't matter about us, forget about us. We just have to never, ever, ever think about any doubts in the person that we're following. And we don't have to, because of all these references, and not just references, but then what Srila Prabhupada did himself, his legacy and all that he did in the 11 years that he was with us. And then, of course, for all of you sitting here today, he was in this room. He was in this room. You know, I asked how many people are 70. How many people are younger than 50? No, is that the right way? Sorry, that's the wrong way of asking that question, isn't it? That's the wrong way of asking that question. What am I trying to get at here? Anyway, it was a recent event that he was in this room. He's in this room now, of course, absolutely. So, you know, yes, we will get chance. This mind, Udared Atmanatmanam Natmanam Uvashadiyat, Krishna tells us, it's our greatest friend, it's our worst enemy. It's our greatest friend when we control it, it's our worst enemy when we can't control it. We can control it, or certainly help to control it, by fixing our intelligence on understanding who this personality was and who we are connected to. It just gives me, personally speaking, this extraordinary and enormous faith, conviction, realization. And just, I'm convinced that no matter what happens to me in my life, that will never be taken away from me. Nobody will ever be able to take away from me the knowledge that this person is the absolute most perfect person to follow in the entire universe for all time. And this person put, as I was reading, put huge importance on the incorporation of his ISKCON society all over the world. He put huge importance on that, and that is what we're celebrating today. Srila Prabhupada ki! ISKCON 50 incorporation ki! Hare Krishna!